Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
I want to hear cannons. Outfield, pull up, ball to the five. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Mike Evans does it again. Fire the cannons, Bucks.
It's first and goal. That's picked off. And who else? Rondé Barber. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers may ride to the Super Bowl with that one.
Third down, 18. Dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon. Throws up a bit.
That's intercepted. Derek Brooks, 30. Brooks to the 29. He's 20. Gone. Derek Brooks all the way. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
And there the cannons go. Fire them. Keep on firing them.
Happy Friday, Bucks fans, and welcome to this week's game preview edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Rhett Matthew, joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host from BucksNation.com, Evan Wanish, joining us today to break down this week's game against the Green Bay Packers. Former Green Bay Packer and host of the On My Block Packers podcast, Mike Wall, fellow member of the Believe Podcast Network as well, joins the show. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking some ball with you. It's always exciting when these two teams get together because there's a lot of history between Green Bay and Tampa Bay. You know, back when Warren Sapp was getting after Brett Favre, obviously the 2020 NFC Championship game, all the meetings in between the regular season contest that, you know, go back in history. There's so much history between these two teams when you really think about it. The Battle of the Bays, if you will. And both teams find themselves in a must-win situation this week, which makes the game that much more important. For the Packers, obviously, they had a three-game win streak, ran into a little bit of a speed bump with the Giants last week, but, you know, obviously still in the midst of it as far as the playoff hunt in the NFC. It's ironic, we look at the AFC and all those teams as you know, playoff time gets closer and the competition gets a lot more stiff, and there's a lot of mid in the NFC. There's six teams right now in the NFC with a 6-7 record, which I think is the most that there has ever been in the history of the conference. So for the Packers, they're still chasing a wild card spot, and the Bucks, you know, a win goes pretty far just to get them three in a row. The first time they could potentially be winning three games in a row since the end of the 2021 season. You want to win as many games as possible here down the stretch. So a big time matchup for both of these teams this week. Evan, your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the Packers, obviously, they're still battling for a wild card spot. And technically, the Bucs are too, but the Buccaneers could be battling for the division still. And they're still in this thing because of the big win against Atlanta. Had they lost against Atlanta, we're having probably a different conversation right now, but they're still in the thick of things. So if they were to maybe not win the NFC South, I mean, I think with the win against Atlanta, if they make the playoffs, it's likely going to be as the NFC South winner. I'm not sure if they'd make it as a wild card. But let's say they wouldn't win the South. This game against Green Bay could potentially matter if you still wanted to make the playoffs as a wild card. So it's a big game for both teams, and especially Green Bay wanting to get that sour taste out of their mouths after a tough game against New York. And I think both teams are going to be highly motivated to come out and play their best ball here.
Mike, when you look at this Packers team so far this season, especially at the quarterback position with Jordan Love, what are your thoughts of where they are right now? Are they playing ahead of schedule? Are they, you know, disappointing a lot of people? It seems like it's been a journey so far this year.
Saying it's a journey is probably the best way to put it. Certainly when you have not only a first-year starter at the quarterback position, even though he's going into year four with Jordan Love, but you also have first and second-year wide receivers, and you have a first-year tight end room, completely first-year tight end room. Really the only veterans on this skill position offense are A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones being our leader, but he's been out for most of the season, really. At least it feels that way. So these guys have certainly gone through that process of being able to identify NFL defenses pre and post snap, being able to communicate verbally and non-verbally, and then just being able to go out there and execute and be on the same page. And sometimes we've looked The arrow has been pointed up for the most part over the course of the season. We've gotten better and better. Last week, I think it was just a lack of execution, particularly at the quarterback position. But what I've noticed over the last maybe, let's say, month is head coach Matt LaFleur and that offensive staff have done a much better job of putting together an offensive game plan that fits the characteristics of this football team, the individuals on it. So I think they're all doing the things that they're meant to be doing in the NFL, and they're doing them. They're starting to do them at a much higher level. But, you know, when you play a game and you lose a game the way you did against the New York Giants with kind of the caliber of team that is, quite frankly, and you were just mentioning there's a lot of kind of teams in the NFC right now. It feels like it's a three-horse race really to the top. But when you lose a game like that, it starts exposing some things that maybe the three-game win streak glossed over. And certainly the Packers have to address those issues if they want to make a splash here in the playoffs.
We'll look at the injury report for both teams as we dive into this week's game. And for the Packers looking to get back to 500, we talk about the talent that they have and some of the veterans. You mentioned A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. We'll bring up that running back tandem again because it seems like Aaron Jones may potentially be making his comeback this week, but a thumb injury for A.J. Dillon means you're probably not going to get them both on the same field at the same time, which is what they've been trying to do all season with not a lot of luck.
Yeah, it's been tough because Aaron's from game one, and I think everybody knew that going into the season he was going to be our offensive MVP. Game one against the Bears, we're not really doing a whole lot until Aaron gets his hands on the ball 6 or 7 times in a row in the second half. We kind of break the game open. He really is that spark for this team. He makes, you know, our average blocking look like good blocking. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's a mismatch for nickel corners or safeties. So he's a guy that we have really missed. And quite frankly, just from a pure running back standpoint and being able to create opportunities for yourself behind the line of scrimmage, A.J. Dillon has not consistently been able to do that. Is that a question of, you know, the offensive line's inability to move humans from a blocking standpoint? That's part of it. But Aaron Jones can kind of get more done with less than A.J. can. So, yeah, getting Aaron back is probably more significant than anything else. If A.J. can't go, Patrick Taylor is a guy that I think that team and that locker room feels very confident that he can fulfill that number two role behind Aaron. But the big thing is, can Aaron Jones get a full day's work here on Sunday?
Yeah, and for the Bucs, a couple of players ruled out already this week. Cornerback Carlton Davis will not be playing. And remind me who else was ruled out.
I believe it is. I just actually saw the tweet. I don't exactly remember who it was, but it was from Greg Allman. So, of course, Greg Allman, Fox Sports. Let's see here. It is Carlton Davis and Will Golston. Thank you. Everyone else will be a game time decision. That's Vita Vea, Chris Godwin, Ryan Neal, and Zach Treiner as well. So you got a couple game time decisions, but two players officially out.
Yeah, and for the Bucs, you know, Vita Vea is going to be huge as we start to dive into this game. His availability, because we talk about this underwhelming defense for the Bucs, and they've been without Vita Vea. Did not have him in the game last week, and you were relying a lot more on these younger guys, but his absence is felt. You're paying him like a top nose tackle in the league, and his presence, he is. You know, you notice when he's not out there, so his status obviously going to be huge for Tampa Bay this week, but Lavonte David going to be back out there, getting back in the swing of things. Devin White making his return is also going to be interesting because the discourse on him has been open ever since he has not been playing for the Bucs these last couple of weeks, and you know he's a big-time free agent here coming up in the offseason. So, Evan, as we look at what the Bucs have on defense facing this Packers offense, what are your thoughts on where they are health-wise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, assuming guys like Jamel Dean, Devin White, who have been out a little bit of time here, assuming they play, I would guess they're still probably game time decisions. They didn't really practice on Wednesday, even though the Buccaneers did a walkthrough, and then they practiced Thursday and Friday. So they're trending towards playing. I mean, health-wise, yeah, it sucks that Carlton Davis is out. Will Golson's obviously going to hurt your defensive line depth, but assuming guys like Vita Vea, Devin White, Jamel Dean can play, it's going to be the healthiest that the Bucs have been in the last few weeks. Even though they've won these games, you know, they beat the Panthers, but were without Lavonte David, Devin White, and then KJ Britt got hurt in that game, and Zavrasi Adenis. So they beat the Panthers with only one healthy linebacker. They were missing Jamel Dean in that game as well. And then they ended up beating the Falcons without Vita Vea. Obviously, Lavonte David returned, still were without Jamel Dean and Devin White. But if both those guys return, it's looking like even though you're down a starter in Carlton Davis, you're still going to be pretty healthy, especially on the defensive side of the football. The offensive side hasn't really been hit with as many injuries as the defensive side, especially as of late. So it'll be nice to get those guys back for a defense, which has been like struggling as of late. Even though, like I said, they have two straight wins, they did struggle at times against Atlanta. They gave up a lot of yards to Atlanta, even made things interesting towards the end there. Have been struggling to get as many turnovers as they did early in the season. I know they did force two turnovers against Atlanta, which is a trend they're going to look to continue against Green Bay, but we'll have to wait and see if they can. I think it's a big deciding factor in this game of who's going to end up winning that turnover battle. But I do think that the Buccaneers' defense getting healthy is definitely a big key for them as they look to make it three straight wins, is like you said. And honestly, though, it's amazing that the last time they had three straight wins was in 2021, way back when Tom Brady was still the quarterback. So Bruce Arians was the head coach, so they have not had three straight wins in quite some time.
Yeah, the defense, you do bring up the turnovers from last week, and those are fantastic. But regardless, they have to be better. You simply cannot give up as many yards as you did in the second half of that game, especially the way that they have in the last few games to opposing running backs. You know, the run game for a lot of these teams, especially in teams that have beaten Tampa Bay, like the Colts game, you know, the running game is what put the Bucs away. And I think depending on the philosophy here for Green Bay, it could potentially do that depending on Aaron Jones and his availability as well. Mike, when you look at the Packers on offense, they are 18th in scoring offense. They are 18th in total offense, 18th in passing offense, 19th in rushing offense. So kind of middle of the board in every facet here. So they really could approach the Bucs any way they want to. I know it's been inconsistent quarterback play from Jordan Love and Aaron Jones, still a little bit of a question mark. Maybe they'll work ease him in. But what do you think their philosophy is on the offensive side of the ball coming into this week?
First of all, I think Vita Vea is a good enough player and he's disruptive enough. We just played Dexter Lawrence, who's probably the other premier nose tackle in the NFC. And when you play those kind of guys, they're disruptive enough that they deserve a little bit of game planning around. So I think the game changes a little bit philosophically if Vita's not playing or if he's only in for a handful of snaps. I think he's, compared to the rest of the people you got on the defensive line, he's just that much better than everybody else. But I think for the Green Bay Packers, The last four weeks, they've done a really good job of manufacturing offense, particularly rushing offense, without being able to run with A.J. Dillon. And what I mean by that is A.J.'s averaging well below 4 yards a carry, but we're able to run the football because guys like Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, they're getting them the ball either in the backfield on jet sweeps or reverses, or they're getting the ball at the line of scrimmage, a la like Andy Reid with the Philadelphia Eagles back in the day, and turning that really short passing game at the line of scrimmage with tunnel screens and whatnot, and turning that into some of your running production. So I think that we're getting a pretty good handle on what guys are good at. Again, talking about it before, as far as Jaden Reed being our Debo Samuel type player in this Kyle Shanahan, like offense that Matt LaFleur, graduated into. And so I feel like we're going to see a much of the same. We're going to try to get Jaden Reed the ball. We're going to use a lot of motion to try to, do two things, really. One, make sure that everyone's on the same page as far as the coverage that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be in. But two, they like to bring a lot of pressure off of like bunch and tight looks. Antoine Field Jr. comes off the edge a lot. If he's down in the box, you have to account for him. If he's not, you have to figure out where he is. So guys like that and situations where we have an opportunity to spread them out, use motion to figure out what exactly is going on and then put the quarterback in the best position to be successful is something that Matt LaFleur has kind of gradually allowed Jordan Love to do more and more during the season. And I think the three games prior to this, even this last game, is just bad throws. But you saw what can happen if you give him that opportunity.
Yeah, and that's why it's even, that much more emphasis on the Buccaneers' pass rush this week to get pressure with four down linemen. I feel like we've been shouting this from the rooftops for the last 3 years about the Buccaneers' defensive line in particular, but you talked about the blitz. You talked about the usage of Antoine Winfield Jr. They're going to send him after the quarterback. If Devin White plays, they're probably going to send him after the quarterback a few times as well. Todd Bowles has never been shy about the blitz, but it seems like in 2023, he's experimented a little bit with how often he likes to resort to it in the games. And I think this could be a game where, again, if you do not see the pressure from that front four, the Bucs are going to be relying a lot on moving some guys around, bringing your safeties close to the line of scrimmage. And that could lead to some mismatches. We saw a huge breakdown last week with Antoine Winfield Jr. just out of position in coverage, giving up a huge, 75-yard touchdown over the top It just wasn't a great look. So the Bucks definitely do have to be careful about that this week. But Evan, your thoughts and expectations for the Buccaneers defense, specifically that pass rush too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're looking at this defense, the pass rush is one of the reasons why I think this defense has struggled. You're looking at guys like Shaq Barrett and Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, two guys that the Buccaneers have a lot invested in. I mean, a first-round pick invested in Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, a lot of money invested in Shaq Barrett, and right now it's just not being productive enough. Vita Vea in the middle has been great. Kalijah Kancey as a rookie has been great. Yaya Diaby in a rotational role as a rookie has been great, but those guys aren't enough. And what it does is when you can't get a pass rush with four, it forces Todd Bowles to blitz. The issue, though, is the Buccaneers, when they do blitz, they haven't been getting home as consistently as they have in years past. And that's where they run into trouble. When you're putting your corners on that island, especially in today's NFL, it just spells trouble. When you blitz and you can't touch the quarterback, no matter who it is, whether it's Lavonte David blitzing, Antoine Winfield Jr. blitzing, Devin White blitzing, no matter who, typically wouldn't send a don't really send corners on blitzes. It's normally those three or any other type of packets that they have with an extra linebacker or something. But when they haven't been able to get home, that's when they've been burned. And the secondary has come under a lot of criticism, especially over the past, I'd say, 6 or 7 weeks, really ever since the Houston Texans game, right, where C.J. Stroud passed for the rookie record for yards and everything and beat the Bucs, went down the field very quickly, right, in 46 seconds and beat the Bucs. I think ever since then, the secondary has really been under a lot of heat, and rightfully so. I mean, they haven't played as well as they could have. Jamel Dean has struggled. Carlton Davis has struggled. So I think when you're looking at this defense, it starts with the pass rush. It starts with that front four, I think. That's going to be key. If Green Bay can protect Jordan Love and give him time, even though, you know, the Packers wide receivers at times have been inconsistent, as we've seen the past few weeks, the Packers offense has been getting much better. Jordan Love as a whole has been getting much better. So if you give Jordan Love time to find guys, I just don't know how good of a day it's going to be for the Buccaneers. Your secondary
264 yards allowed per game, which is 30th in passing defense in the NFL for the Buccaneers secondary, 10th in rush defense, only averaging 98.8 yards allowed per game. But it's still not the same run defense it was when it was, you know, top two in the league, 2019, 2020.
Well, and also I think those numbers are skewed a little bit because teams aren't running on Tampa as much. So, you know, it's a smaller sample size because teams know that to attack them, yeah, you're probably going to throw the ball 30 plus times to be able to attack this defense effectively. And it's been effective for the most part.
Yeah. We talk about the offensive approach now for Tampa Bay, and let's continue the conversation on the run game. Dave Canales came out this week, the offensive coordinator, and says that, you know, he is all in favor of continuing to be stubborn with the run game. If he gets a look that they like from the opposing defense, they are going to run the other team out of town. And that's what they have done these last couple of weeks with the emergence of Rashad White. We had mentioned 2 out of 300-yard rushing days for him over the last three games. And he's that much more of a facet in the receiving game as well. I think it's going to be another heavy day for him this week. I mean, no snow as far as we know on the forecast in Lambeau. The Bucs have played a snow game. I think the last time they played in Lambeau in the snow was that one overtime thriller with Jameis Winston, and what was that, 2017, 2018? I don't know. They lost. But regardless, you know, no snow, but I have to think that stubbornness in the run game is going to continue for another week in a row. What do you think, Evan?
Yeah, I think so. Especially, look, I mean, going to be honest, like, yeah, they've been winning, but like Baker Mayfield has not looked as sharp as he has in the past few weeks that he did in the first 4 or 5 games of the season. You know, he has not looked as sharp. The turnover bug has bitten him a little bit. Luckily, he was able to avoid that in Atlanta. If he doesn't, they probably lose the game. I think that was a huge key for him not turning the ball over at all. I do think the Buccaneers are going to rely on Rashad White, especially in that second half against Atlanta, particularly particularly in the fourth quarter, I mean, they just wore down Atlanta's defensive line, and they were pounding the rock. And it was, I mean, getting not two, three yards. They were getting 4, 5, 6 yards a run. It was just really gashing them. So I think Rashad White's going to be a heavy dose here, both in the run game and pass game. Obviously, we saw he took that screen pass to the house last week, really jump-started the Bucs and had them, you know, up 2 scores at that point. So I think you're going to see a lot of Rashad White. I think you're going to continue to see that for the rest of the season. And it's a good progression that they're going through. Particularly, I just hope the only thing that worries me about Dave Canales' comments, and look, he's made it very clear throughout the season, even when they were really struggling around the ball, like, he's not going to shy away from it, right? We're not going to change the game plan and have Baker Mayfield throw the ball 45 times, because quite frankly, that's not a successful recipe. But I don't know if you can expect to run at the pace that you did against the Atlanta Falcons, particularly in that second half, where that's just not consistently going to happen in the NFL. It's not going to happen. You're going to be facing tougher opponents and tougher environments, and particularly in this environment in Lambeau in December against the Green Bay team, who's going to be desperate for a win coming off a disappointing loss. I think their defense is going to, you know, really take some pride in it, and I think they're going to try and stop these. I mean, they look at the same thing we all do, right? They see what Rashad White did, and they're going to try and stop it because they know that if the Bucs are able to run the ball too, they have the offensive weapons on the outside with Evans and Godwin to be able to attack you that way. So being able to make the Bucs one-dimensional is pretty key in this.
Yeah, these past 2 weeks, as you had mentioned, the Bucs have been in a position to put the game away in the fourth quarter with the run game. I don't think that's going to happen this week. It's a tough place to play. It's Lambeau in December. I know it's a huge loss for Green Bay, who was previously undefeated with Matt LaFleur in Lambeau in the month of December before the Giants came to town. But it's still going to be an incredibly tough game. Now, the numbers are in the Bucs' favor as far as what the rushing game allows in Green Bay. They are ranked 31st in rush defense, allowing 141.8 yards per game. But the reason I don't think allowing Baker Mayfield to throw the ball quite as much this week is simply because they still have a top 10 secondary. Despite the injuries on the defensive side of the ball, Mike, still 8th in passing defense, only averaging 200.2 yards allowed per game. The Green Bay defense has still done a pretty good job at just neutralizing offenses this year.
Yeah, any success they've had has really been based from the defensive line moving back. Really, I know you just talked about the secondary and the passing numbers look good, but the reality is we've given up 4 200-yard rushing games this year, and when you do that, there's not a whole lot of need to throw the football. And guys like Jared Goff, even in the Thanksgiving game, he threw the ball all over the yard. So teams have had success on that, certainly. But when our defensive line comes to play, we have a lot invested in our defensive line. We have some really good ends. Our outside linebackers, Rashad Gay and Preston Smith, are really, really quality players. Kenny Clark's a third-round pick from years ago out of San Bernardino, California, that is just he's been a really good leader and good player for that team. He can win the one-on-one battle up front. But for whatever reason, at the second level, at the linebacker position, not being able to fill gaps fast enough, missing a lot of tackles and run fits in the secondary, we just miss tackles. And when you miss tackles in the National Football League against good players, you know, you got guys like Rashad White licking your chops. And I watched the Falcons game and I go, well, if the Falcons are going to run 6 in the box against an NFL team and they don't get run on, then, you know, shame on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know that the Green Bay Packers are going to spend too much time in a 6-man box against a tight end attached football team in Tampa Bay. I don't know that that makes a lot of sense, especially given how bad they've been at the running game. One would think that they try to stack the box, put at least 7 players in the box at all times, and then account for additional tight ends if necessary. But play single safety and force Baker Mayfield to beat you. I know there's issues with Mike Evans, obviously, on the outside. If you do that, we don't know if Alexander's going to be healthy. We took Rasul Douglas and gave him a bus ticket to Buffalo for a 3rd-round pick or 5th-round pick, which didn't make a lot of sense to anybody. But right now we got Ballantyne and Valentine outside, young guys playing well. For the most part. And my guess is, listen, if you're giving up 31st in the league in rushing, like, Green Bay Packers have a history of playing good football, and that's bad football. So my guess is they're going to do everything they can to make this a one-dimensional football game, even if it's at the expense of missing a couple big plays downfield with Mike Evans.
Evan, when you look at, obviously, what the Bucs have on the table with this offense, Mike Evans was absent last week, one catch, and he didn't get it till the third quarter. So Atlanta obviously did their homework and did a good job at taking him out of the game. But, you know, there's still a couple of guys who could pop up and have an underrated day on this Buccaneers offense. I think the tight ends could be in the discussion as well this week. Cade Otton has been an underrated part of this Buccaneers offense in his second season so far this year. So if it's not Rashad White, I still think there's room for maybe someone else, maybe Cade Otton. I don't think he's going to have a monster day. But if Mike Evans has a tough day once again, then maybe this is the week we've been waiting for Chris Godwin to get back into the game. I mean, he's only going to be getting limited targets, but what do you think with what the Bucs have?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If Jair Alexander is healthy enough, you know, it's the second straight week of a tough corner matchup for Mike Evans. Facing A.J. Terrell last week, it would be Jair Alexander this week. Two of the better corners in not just the NFC, but in the NFL. And Atlanta did, like you said, a great job of disguising coverages, really taking away Mike Evans. I mean, not only did he only have one catch, he only had, I believe, two or three targets. So it wasn't even like they were really targeting him or throwing the ball his way. He just didn't get to him. No, they didn't even throw the ball near him. So Atlanta did a really nice job, and I'm guessing Green Bay is going to try and replicate what they did and sort of mask, you know, what they did and take Mike Evans out of the game, because when you do that, it's going to help. It definitely is going to help. And I do think Cade Otton could be a guy that's involved. Like I mentioned earlier, I think Rashad White in the passing game is going to be involved. And look, we've been, you know, beating this dead horse basically about Chris Godwin, right? And it's a weekly discussion now of when is this guy going to get going? He did have some success against Atlanta, obviously had the big play on third down, which ended up leading to the Cade Otton touchdown last week. If, you know, if that ball is incomplete and the Bucs are facing a fourth and eight, fourth and nine, there with the season on the line, essentially. Not sure how that goes, but you know, Chris Godwin made a pretty clutch play there. They're going to need some more plays from him, though. I don't know if you can expect Mike Evans only have one catch. I think that's going to be an emphasis too, get Mike Evans involved early. I think they're going to, you know, give him some easy ones, right, to work with. Nothing big, maybe, you know, get him a little bit warmed up. You know, just like Mike said, you know, there's some opportunities to throw against this Green Bay team. But I do agree with Mike when he says they're also going to force Baker Mayfield to beat him. And I think that's the right play right now. And that's what, honestly, most defenses are probably going to do. They're going to force Baker Mayfield to probably beat you, obviously, in certain situations. On the road in Lambeau, is Baker Mayfield going to be able to go in there and play well enough to win? We'll have to wait and see. But I think getting Mike Evans involved early and then sprinkling in guys like Chris Godwin, Cade Otton, and Rashad White is going to be the key here.
I was just going to add to that. You know, that's the beauty of having a Mike Evans on your football team. And sometimes, you know, across the country, Mike Evans is kind of underrated. Yeah. He's a Hall of Fame football player. And maybe it's because Baker Mayfield's his quarterback. But when you watch this game, you know, take a look at early on when you're game playing. If you're an offensive coordinator, if you're Dick Canales, you're game planning for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, your first question is how they're going to play Mike. That's your first question. And you're going to figure it out early. And what was confusing last week, just as somebody who likes watching tape, is offensively, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will not always take advantage. Like, you can put Mike Evans on the right and you can put four receivers out into routes on the left. And you can figure out very quickly, because like when I say you're going to play single safety high, I'm telling you right now that you can't play single safety high and double Mike Evans. Like that's something that is not possible to do, right? Otherwise you're playing zero with everybody else. So when the Green Bay Packers are thinking about this game, they have to at least show too high for a lot of this game and have guys fill and triggering quickly. But if you're going to have your eyes on Mike, otherwise you're leaving a Hall of Fame caliber player one-on-one, and eventually he's going to hook up. The question that Ken Nelson and Dave Baker Mayfield and all these guys have to figure out is, when we determine that he's not going to be our go-to because they're doubled, what is our next two matchups? Because Baker does a good job of getting to his fourth and fifth read at times. Like if you give him pocket time, he's a smart player. You know, Baker's a journeyman because he's had really bad coaching for a lot of years. And this is his first real chance to get, I could be the guy here if he can get the job done. And in a stable organization, right? But he can get to those reads. It's just, can you get there faster? Can you just turn this one off? And can we get over here quicker? And that, there's opportunities all over that tape to do that. He's just not quite doing that at the level that is required yet.
Yeah, a big thing with Baker too.
That's been a big problem for Baker his whole career. You know, it's the processing part of things.
And he can get to the read, but a big thing that I've noticed this year too is his ability to just pull the trigger. You know, there's been a couple of times this year where he's in the pocket, he gets a good look, has time to pump fake, and then psychs himself out, decides to keep it and run. And that's been the difference for the Bucks in a couple of these games, especially towards the end of the game in some of the previous matchups we've talked about, where they've had to rely on this offense down the stretch. And if you come out and you give us that look and go three and out, it's not going to be great for the Bucks, who are still going, you know, a long way in determining if Baker's going to be that guy for the future. But Mike, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I wanted to ask you some more about, you know, from an outside perspective, as a guy who, of course, has a love of the game, but as someone who looks at what Baker Mayfield has done in Tampa, and obviously what you think he can do this week, you know, what are your thoughts so far? Do you think the Bucks fans are maybe being a little too harsh on him? Because I tell you, it is 80-20 negativity down here as far as, you know, what the loudest of noises are among the fan base regarding Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and obviously Tom Brady goes down there for 1 year and wins a Super Bowl. That's tough, right? But you got to remember, you won a Super Bowl with Brad Johnson too.
Yeah.
Like Brad is an NFL quarterback and nothing more.
Yeah, free agent QBs get it done. We're like the opposite of Green Bay.
Yeah, here's what I always talk about. When people ask me about quarterbacks, I go, listen, we have 32 NFL football teams and we don't have 32 NFL quarterbacks. Like, that's a fact. Like, there are not 32 starting caliber. Even the casual fan would go, that is not a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. You know, you look at some of these teams even right now. And so when you think about it's Baker or what else? And for me, I look at Baker Mayfield. I was a huge fan of his in college. He gets drafted and they have, I think, four coordinators in 4 years. He goes through the whole debacle with, I even forgot the guy's name, but they get fired. He gets Kenny, doesn't matter. But Dorsey? They go through multiple head coaches, multiple coordinators. Pickens? Anyways, over in Cleveland, bounces to Carolina, bounces to, actually has like something in McVay in LA, but, you know, he's just a placeholder there until Stafford gets back. And so this is his like real, this is his, a lot of people could look at this and go, like, this is your first year of real football. I know that sounds crazy because he's been in the NFL. And, you know, from the outside perspective, you're going, wait a second, these are all NFL franchises, NFL coaches. Not all franchises are built the same, and not all coaching staffs are built the same. And he has right now, this might be his first and best real chance to be successful. Now, what he does with that, you just have to continue to build, develop those. When you're talking about pump, you see it, but you're not doing it. Well, if you're not executing, like, you're probably not the guy. So you just have to be able to prove that I can identify, I can communicate to my teammates, and I can execute. You got to do those three things at an elite level if you want to play quarterback in the National Football League. And Baker has the tools. He's proven that he has the tools to do it. What a guy like Baker probably needs is a little more confidence and preparation. I think a lot of that comes from where you're at and who you're with.
One more guy on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense I wanted to highlight. And, you know, I don't think we've quite given this guy as much credit as we should have this week. He had a great week last week. That's the running back, too. That's Chase Edmonds. There has been a lot of talk on today's show about the run game for both teams. And Chase Edmonds was the man last week. He had 8 carries for 40 yards, averaging 5 yards a toe. It doesn't get much better than that. I think if the Bucs are going to rely on the run game this week, you're going to need another performance similar. I'll say this. Sample size is important, Evan, and I want to get your take on this, but I've been a huge fan of what I've seen this season from Chase Edmonds as the running back, too. It was kind of a revolving door the first couple weeks of the season for Tampa Bay. You had, you know, an undrafted free agent back there in Sean Tucker. He seemingly has not been back after, like, week 5. And then, of course, Keyshawn Vaughn, who they literally ran into the ground, your favorite player, the third-round pick from a couple of years ago. So Chase Edmonds is that guy, and he has done a really good job. In the several games that he has had, you know, 4 or 5 carries or more, he's averaging 4-plus yards per carry, and you're going to need a lot of that again this week if it's going to be run heavy.
Yeah, and the interesting thing you say, you know, about run heavy, and that's right. I mean, you can't run Rashad White 30 times. So, Chase Edmonds has proven that he can do that. And it sucks that he got hurt early in the season. He got hurt week two. So he had to miss a couple of games there. And that's sort of why that revolving door at running back two was there. And they were playing just some not good running backs. Like, Chase Edmonds is a better running back than Keyshawn Vaughn. He is a better running back than Sean Tucker. And the other thing that Chase Edmonds can help out with is in the passing game. And he has experience doing that. His acceleration, I think, is one of his best, assets. So if you get him in the screen game, and he gets a little bit of space, I think he could be dangerous that way. But yeah, I would expect, to see a little bit of Chase Edmonds here as well, because look, I mean, Rashad White's had some really good weeks, but like mid-season, there was a lot of questions about whether or not he was the guy or just a guy. And I think Rashad White is probably best served, and this might not be, I'm not saying the Bucs have to go out and do this in the offseason or they have to do this for the rest of the season, but Rashad White's probably best served not being the bell cow guy, but probably being that 1A, 1B type guy where it's kind of him and somebody else, right? Not him and three other guys who are like the 49ers used to do it before Christian McCaffrey got there, where it would be, Jeff Wilson and Eli Mitchell and all these guys. No, but I think Rashad White's probably best when he's not getting every single touch out of the backfield. I think that's his best. That's his strongest suit. And I think Chase Edmonds being there and being productive could certainly help that. So yeah, it's good that you mentioned him.
Mike, when you look at the Packers on offense or defense, is there one player in this game who you would look at as an X factor for them? Basically the make or break guy. If he doesn't perform well, then the team likely doesn't perform their game plan to the best of their abilities.
I honestly gotta put just so many, and the obvious one you're gonna say is Jordan Love. Let's see, on defense, I don't think Tristan Wirfs is really, really good. Like, he's a unicorn good in the National Football League. He's special. The rest of those guys are not moving a lot of humans off the ball. And because of that, you have to the Falcons last week, I go back to it. They're running six in the box, and like they got a shade, and then like they had like a wide nine on the other side of Wirfs. And so they just had this easy double team on the nose tackle up to the line. It was like an easy game. They're running their little, open side gap schemes and whatnot. If our linebackers don't get and play on the other side of the line of scrimmage, I think this is going to be a game that plays right into Tampa's hands. Like we've had the Green Bay Packers have had two different types of linebacker play. We've tried to penetrate and play on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage, and we've had a lot of success. And we've tried to sit back and catch, and we've had a lot of bad, a lot of, 5, 6, 7 yard tackle guy, 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. So I think how our linebackers play, if Quay Walker's back, if Isaiah McDuffie's filling in for him, like how that goes, Devondre Campbell, I think that's important on the defensive side. And then offensively, we've used Jaden Reed last week in particular because Christian Watson was out. Jaden Reed, our rookie from Michigan State, we're using him to identify defenses. We're using him as a complimentary piece in the running game. We're using him in the screen game. So he's kind of become, like I said before, kind of our Debo guy where he plays receiver, but we want to hand him off the ball. We want to run jet sweeps. We want to run screens, tunnels, all of that kind of stuff. But they're using him across the ball to identify coverage and identify pressure opportunities. So his kind of unique skill set has really played in, I think, help evolve this offense. It would be nice to get Christian back because he can take the cover off, he can take the top off the defense. But if you're just looking to if you're looking for a guy that really changes the complexity or the complexion of how Green Bay Packers have run their offense over the last, let's say, 2 months, it's evolved because of Jaden Reed's involvement.
Evan, who are you thinking?
Yeah, well, really quick note on Jaden Reed. Yeah, I really did. I liked him pre-draft. I thought it was a great pick by the Packers and starting to really become a focal point at offense. So,
can you imagine he was an All-American and then like everybody forgets about him because his quarterback's no good?
Yeah.
So he was an All-American's like sophomore year, and then they lose their quarterback, so he doesn't get any balls the next year, and everybody forgets that he's a good player. It just shows you like how messed up the NFL draft process is, man.
Yeah, you can find some steals. Can find some steals for sure. But I think I'm going to go X factor on defense and offense. We're talking about on defense, I'll probably say Vita Vea, assuming he plays, because I just think I think whoever wins that front four battle on either side of the ball is going to you're going to look at the end of this game at 5 o'clock at night on Sunday. You're going to be looking at this game and be like, oh yeah, the Packers won because they just controlled the line of scrimmage better, or the Bucs won because they were able to get after Jordan Love and they were able to protect Baker Mayfield. I just think that's going to be a key. So if Vita Vea plays, I think he is going to be the X factor on defense. And then on offense, it's going to be boring, but it's going to be Baker Mayfield. And I know Baker Mayfield was also my X factor last week, but just like Mike said, I think the Packers could put Mayfield in a lot of situations where it's going to be Mayfield has to make the throws to beat the Packers. Like, I don't know if they're going to make things easy, you know, on first and second down, get these 4, 5, 6 yard runs to set up third and short, second and short, you know, it makes things, you know, easier for the offense. I think the Packers are going to want the Buccaneers in those second and longs and third and longs to force Mayfield to make those throws, just like Atlanta did at the end of the game, you know, last week. Mayfield was able to make the throws last week. Can he do that on a consistent basis here in a tough environment? We'll have to wait and see, but I think Baker is the X factor for the ball. I know it's boring. I wish I could pick somebody else, but I just think the ball's going to be in his hands. It's a big game, right? And the ball's going to be in his hands. That's, you know, he's going to want the ball in his hands. That's what you're paying him for. That's what he's playing for a contract for. So I think you're going to want that.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For listeners, I want to say I've tried to be more positive. I've been working on it. And listen, I'm the eternal optimist here on the show for any of you not up to speed. But something about this Bucs team, even though they have stacked two division wins.
You can't trust them.
Which is why I do not think Tampa Bay wins this football game. I think a lot of things, just like they have all season, I think a lot of things have to go right for the Bucs to win. And I think the trajectory that the Packers were on, you know, 3 wins in a row, I know that loss to New York had to be incredibly demoralizing, because as a non-Packers fan, I went to bed and I was like, ah, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, both of the games that were on, it was Tennessee, Miami, and then it was New York and Green Bay. I went to bed 0-2 on my picks. Because I just completely discounted the Giants at this point in the season. And that's obviously on me, because it's any given Sunday or primetime game.
It's Tommy DeVito.
Yeah, so. It's Tommy Cutlets. You know, come on. But I just think the Packers are on a better trajectory than the Bucs are, which is crazy to say, because the Bucs are obviously fighting for the top of their division and the Packers playing for a wild card spot here. But I think the quarterback play, you've got a little more upside, realistically. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about the inconsistency from Jordan Love. And listen, I'm not a guy who watches the Packers every week, but I am a guy who has watched Baker Mayfield every week, and I still think that's a big question mark. You know, I think the Packers have seen a lot to like from Jordan Love, and I think you would agree, even though there is probably a lot to not like. But regardless, I think this Packers defense is going to make it tough running the football. And they're just gonna make Baker uncomfortable. It's gonna be up to Dave Canales to not only scheme him some high percentage plays, you know, play action rollouts of Baker Mayfield. That's his bread and butter. I'd love to see a little bit more of that. Seems like they got away from that as the season went on. But if they force him to throw the ball, I don't know how well it's gonna go. It's not gonna lead to a lot of points. So I've got the Bucs dropping this one in Lambeau. No shame in losing in Lambeau in December. 20-17 is my final score prediction. I think the Packers win it by a field goal. What do you think, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to, like I just said, it's tough to trust this Bucs team in a tough environment. Green Bay is going to be motivated to win. I mean, you know, fighting for a wild card spot, two losses down the stretch, you know, two straight losses in December. I don't know if you can have that, right? So that would be pretty killer if they were to do that. And even the way they lost against the Giants, you know, taking the lead and then surrendering it pretty quick there. I think they're going to come out, you know, motivated in front of the home crowd. And I just, like you said, I just think there's more upside with Green Bay's roster too. And I think that the high-end players that Green Bay have, if they come to play, you know, like the Kenny Clark, the Preston Smith, you know, I think they could have real problems as far as, you know, Tampa Bay goes. But And you know, when you look at the quarterback position, right? Jordan Love could definitely be a guy who, which by the way, like the Bucs defense has given up a ton of explosive plays this year. And Jordan Love has been one of the best quarterbacks hitting downfield throws so far this season. Even when he was struggling earlier in the season, you know, they were still able to hit to some of those shots. So look out for guys like Jaden Reed, right? Even though I'm not sure Christian Watson, he's out, right? Right, Mike?
There's only two guys that missed practice today. I can't remember who they were. Christian Watson could very well be out. There's just a litany of injuries at this time of year, as you guys know. But we'll have to. See. Christian Watson was the one that started catching some of those 50-50 balls that Jordan's been throwing up all season. And when you say he's connecting on deep balls, if I'm just being honest with you, then it's not pretty. If they're all contested catches. And I mean, there's a footwork issue and whatnot. But yeah, if Christian Watson's out, that deep threat does change a little bit because those contested catchers are out the door.
Yeah. So when looking at this game, I actually think this game is going to be a little bit higher scoring than you do, Rhett. I think both offenses could have some success here. The Bucs offense is trending in the right direction. The Bucs defense is trending in the wrong direction. So I think when you combine that being on the road for the second straight week in a tough environment, I don't think the Bucs win. I do think it's a little bit higher scoring. I'm going to say Packers 27, Bucs 23.
What do you think, Mike?
You know, that sounds about right. I thought it was going to be both teams probably in the 20s from a scoring perspective. I think right now when you look at your injuries, and again, we just don't know who's going to play, but just based on last week alone, like the Packers roster is that we put out last week is better than the Bucs roster that they put out last week. And so we're just basing off that. Vita Vea plays, all these things do change. Devin White, obviously. But I think roster, man for man, we just have a stronger roster right now. And offensively, as bad as it looked last week, you know, when you have bad footwork at the quarterback position, there's going to be weeks where you miss the gimme throws, and there's weeks that you won't. And so if Jordan Love bounces back, has a little more attention to detail, that game last week looks a lot different. And certainly I think going up against this Bucs defense looks a lot different. We put some points on the board for the first time in a while at home. And defensively, look, I've never been around or followed a team that's given up 200 yards this many times in the National Football League. So every time we talk about stopping the run, I just remember like, yeah, we said that against the Falcons. Yeah, we said that against the Giants. And so while this Tampa Bay team doesn't – I don't think it puts the fear in God of you from a running the football standpoint, you do have to point to last week and go, it looks like they figured some stuff out. They were willing to stick with it. And one thing I like about your offensive lineman we didn't really talk about was I don't think they move humans very well, but what they do is they stay square to the line of scrimmage and they stick to the guys pretty well. So if you know Rashad White and these guys can kind of just bide their time, they do a pretty good job of sneaking through some holes and getting extra yards, falling forward for five or six. And that's where the Green Bay Packers have really been bad. So that's gonna be a big matchup. 27-23 sounds about right to me. Packers.
Big time matchup this week for both of these teams. A must-win game in the quest for the postseason. But that's just about going to do it for this week's game preview edition of the Cannon Fire podcast. Want to say a very special thank you to our guest, Michael Wall, from the On My Block Packers podcast. Mike, where can the people find you and your content?
Yeah, you can follow me at MikeWall68 on Twitter, Prostitute Perform on Instagram. You can check out the On My Block podcast on YouTube, our Prostitute Perform channel on YouTube or anywhere you get your audio version. We do a ton of film breakdowns. So if you guys like watching video, I got a big breakdown of the Bucs as well for this preview show that just came out yesterday. Check that out, On My Block podcast on YouTube.
Awesome. We appreciate your time, man. Looking forward to a good game this week. Always seems like fun. I will say, the last time these two teams played was week 3 of the 2022 season. It was the home opener. It was week 4, I'm sorry, but it was the first week of October, and holy hell, it was hot. I got some pretty decent tickets for that game, but man, I was sweating it out. One of the hotter games I remember in the month of October.
I had a YouTube thing pop up on me yesterday, and I'll just date my age, but I played in that 2020 or the 2002 game when we were down in Tampa and Warren Sapp laid out my buddy Chad on the blind side on the pick. I don't know if you guys remember that, but those were Tampa Bay, back when we were in the same division. Those were battles, man. I mean, I've looked back so fondly on being able to go down and play Warren Sapp and Simeon and Lynch and Brooksy and all those guys. What a bunch of quarrels. I mean, what a bunch of studs they had back in the day. They were an absolute, just an absolute train wreck to play against on offense, man.
When you talk about really quick, when you talk about, you know, game planning and you're always looking at one particular guy, mm-hmm. how did you go about with that, you know, with all those players you named? Was it stopping Sapp?
Yeah, it was always, and every, you know, listen, we had a really good offensive line and running game. We had Amon Green in the backfield, Will Henderson. Our whole, at one point or another, I think our entire offense was Pro Bowl players. We were just really good. And I don't ever remember having a game plan for a linebacker or safety, corner, nothing. But we did have to. Warren Sapp was a guy that was like, okay, we're gonna slide to him whenever we can, and when we can, it's like you gotta figure out how to make it happen. Simeon Rice was a really, really good player, but for whatever reason, Chad Clifton could always have success against him. So it was always like, I played left guard, Marco Rivera played right guard, and it was always like, can you guys just please not let Warren, because Warren was always yapping at Brett anyway, so it was this thing going, it was always hyped up, and so they were always kind of on their best day. But yeah, we would walk into that game going, if we don't block Warren, we're in trouble. The good news about that was the nose tackle, whether it was Booger McFarland or I forgot that there was a white, like 6'1" white guy who preceded him. I can't remember who it was. He lost like 90 pounds afterwards. What was his name?
Culpepper.
But was it John Culpepper, something like that?
Brad Culpepper.
That's right. So whether it was one of those two guys, they couldn't rush the passer at all. Like they were, it's like negative pass rush. So Warren would always be like, wait till I get my guy. And we go down there and be like, man, he's still not here. Like, when's he going to show up? We'll just keep double teaming you until you get another pass rusher at the nose tackle spot.
I got to say, man, you know, one of my favorite things about that rivalry, and we'll wrap it up with this. I don't know if you're a uniform snob at all, but there's something about just core football memories. Like some of the first memories I have watching football on TV, just the colors that I remember, it's that red and pewter facing off against the white and the yellow, man. Something about it, I don't know what it was. It's why I got really, really, really excited when I saw Green Bay was coming to town back in 2020 with Brady. I think that game was week 6 because I knew we were going to see that matchup. I don't think the Bucs ended up wearing red. They ended up wearing
They don't wear red at all.
Yeah, so. I mean, they've worn the red one time this season, and this week marks the 11th time they have worn their white. So rest in peace, I guess, unofficially to the red and pewter. It's our primary colors. You would think they embrace it some more, but they don't. Regardless, looking forward to a good matchup this week between these two teams. It's always a lot of fun. Mike, thank you again for your time. Follow our show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show. And, of course, Tampa Bay Buccaneer news as it happens. Speaking of Bucs news as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram, Bucs_daily, the #1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers news page on Instagram, rapidly approaching 30,000 followers. You can also find Evan on Twitter at EvanNFL and check out his written work at BucsNation.com. What have you got this week?
Yeah, going to be doing the SB Nation Q&A, the 5 questions with the Packers SB Nation site, as well as the X Factor, which I know I named Baker Mayfield here. Might do Vita Vea just for the article's sake, so I don't have 2 straight articles talking about Baker Mayfield being the X Factor, so keep an eye out for that.
Last but not least, you can find myself Instagram and Twitter at Redicus, RHETTAKUS. If you follow me, I will follow you back. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday. Win, lose, or draw, we'll be live right here after the game. YouTube.com/ Cannon Fire Podcast. We will talk to you then. I'm your host, Rip Matthews, signing off from my co-host, Evan Wanish, and our special guest, Michael Wall. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you the next one. Until then, and as always, go Bucks.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.